Hello, friends and listeners of the LeaderCast podcast. This is Mo, the producer, jumping on really quick before this episode starts to let you know that we are going to be wrapping up season one of the podcast. The final episode in season one will be coming out on April 23rd. We are going to be coming back with an even better season two later this year. Stay tuned on our socials for updates as we know more, and thank you for being an avid listener.
In the publishing world, you know, I've got friends that will try to write a book and they get turned down and they're done. And I'm like, I never needed 1,000 yeses. I needed one. And I've written 9 books since.
Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast, a weekly deep dive into the stories that transformed our guests into leaders worth following. Today's guest is Peter DeWitt. He is the CEO and founder of the Instructional Leadership Collective. He barely graduated from high school and has devoted the rest of his life to helping schools lead better. You're going to love this episode. Hi, Peter DeWitt. Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast. We're excited to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Super excited to get to meet you today. One of the things I've just been asking folks lately as we get started is if I grabbed you and threw you up on a stage in front of a few hundred people, and I said, you have exactly 90 seconds to give your best leadership advice. Don't overthink it. Just so we kind of get to know who you are as a leader, what do you think you would just say off the top of your mind in 90 seconds?
The best advice that I ever received when I was asked to be a school principal, I said, no, I'm never going to be a school principal. And I talked to two guys at a gym later on, and they looked at me and said, what if you could be the principal you want to be, not the one you think you have to be? And that was some of my best leadership advice, because what I realize is sometimes we follow leaders that may have not blown us away. Yeah. And we have to be like them. And the reality is, whatever your leadership position, I don't care what sector you're in, be the leader you want to be, not the one you think you have to be.
That's pretty solid. It's pretty good for a 90-second speech. I love it.
I think that was less than 90 seconds, too. I think I deserve extra credit for that.
Spoken like a true educator, wanting extra credit.
That's right.
So tell the folks, we've already kind of got into it, but tell the folks what you kind of do now. What is your life mission about?
So I work a lot with schools and organizations around the world on leadership and also on collaboration. There's a blend of research and practice. I was a teacher for 11 years in some high-poverty city schools. I was a principal for 8 years. And for the last 10 years, I've worked as a consultant. And I started my own organization last October, actually. So called the Instructional Leadership Collective. So I work with organizations around the world. And it could be anywhere from teacher leaders to school leaders to district leaders. And I work with governments, you know, I work with things like Education Scotland and the, you know, Victorian government in Melbourne, Australia. So there's just a lot. There's a lot that I work with.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad our platform, there's a ton of folks that listen to this and on our LeaderCast 365 platform online in every sector you can imagine of leadership. But we do have a significant portion of folks that are, especially in K-12, lots of principals and teachers that are part of our platform. And maybe you can give them a voice to everyone else who listens today. Like what do you, obviously leadership is leadership at some level, but yeah, it's different, everywhere you lead. So what's unique about leading in education, in that environment compared to say, I don't know, a Fortune 500 company or leading, your own business or something like that?
You know, I think there are a lot of nuances that are both good and bad. I mean, I guess you can look at it from a good and bad side. When it comes to things like school leadership, you're really focused on kids, right? And outcomes. So anybody who's listening, who is a parent, they don't necessarily look at their child as a product, and we can't either.
Yeah.
And every day they come in with significant, you know, just whether it's significant issues, you know, there are just lots of families. So being in school leadership, there are a lot of moving parts, because not only are you focused on academics and making sure that all the students are doing well and you're having an impact on student learning in positive ways, but you're also dealing with adult behavior. So that could be your staff, could be teachers that you're working with. How are you getting them to work in collaboration, which is something that every sector needs to talk about, right? Yeah. How do we truly work in collaboration? And as a school leader, for me, it was about how do I lower my status, because I was the only one, you know, how do I lower my status and raise the status and the capacity of the people around me? And then, of course, you have families that you're working with as well. And not all families understand the day-to-day actions of what's going on in school. They understand their child going into your school.
Right.
They don't understand the rest of the student population. So there are just those kind of things. And then, of course, on top of it all is the curriculum. And depending on what state you're in, you know, you have mandatory curriculum that you might be teaching, standards, things like that. And when you, these days, over the past few years, it's been highly politicized. So you've got those nuances that are a part of it as well. So there's just like, there's a lot. And I read Harvard Business Review every month, and when I'm reading it, I'm reading it with the educator mindset. But the reality is when they're talking about running a business and collaboration and AI and all of these things, those are all things that I'm deeply interested in.
Yeah, it strikes me as one of those jobs where you could, it's really like probably four or five jobs in one, but especially a teacher, but obviously a principal, because you're kind of like a CEO, right? You're running a business, but you're also probably a little bit of a therapist and a shrink at times, and kind of a social worker. Oh, wow. You got all this stuff going on all at the same time. For those that manage it, can create kind of a well-rounded skill set, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting for me is I thought I would be in K-12 education for the rest of my life, meaning teacher, principal, whatever. Yeah. So when I went into consulting and working with my publisher, you start working without a net. That was a little bit different for me than anything that I had ever experienced. I left what they referred to as the golden parachute because I went out on my own. And then just within the past couple of years, I've worked strictly on my own. And then started the corporation. So having that business mindset is actually very different and not necessarily something that I went to school for. But the reality is I didn't go in. I mean, I barely graduated from high school, to be honest with you. So to be in the position I'm in a leadership position and having your own business and all of those things, marketing, you know, how are you, you know, investing your money, all of that stuff is not anything that I was necessarily well equipped to do. And I'm learning it as I go along.
Okay. I can't just buzz past that you barely graduated from high school and then you end up in education. So that's gotta be a story. I'd love to hear what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one that I didn't share for a very long time, actually. But I actually was retained in fourth grade. My mom went back to get her GED when I was in sixth grade. And my dad actually passed away when I was in fifth. And I'm the youngest of five. Wow. And I was the first to go to college. But when I graduated from high school, I actually graduated ranked 262 out of 266. I can laugh about it now.
Yeah.
But I was one of those kids that was really told to focus on a two-year school because I probably wouldn't get any further. And luckily, after bouncing around a couple of community colleges, I was a long-distance runner. And I had a coach that said, listen, what if you want to run with us, you've got to go into the Learning Assistance Center or you're not going to be able to work out with the team. And he was great. I still talk to him to this day. And I went in with a 1.7 GPA and I walked out that semester with a 3.86. And I now have two master's degrees and a doctorate, all of which I had 4.0 in. So, yeah, I have a very different view on education. And I think sometimes people want me to be the guy to say, oh, my school treated me so badly and that's why I didn't do it. It really wasn't that. It was, you know, I think it was a variety of things when I was in school in the 70s and 80s. I graduated in 89. You know, there were just a variety of factors, including the fact that I was completely lost and we were kind of struggling as a family because of losing our dad and stuff. So,
sure, there's a lot.
So I don't like look and point fingers and anything like that. I look at the fact, actually, quite honestly, I didn't know back then what it would set me up to do now, but I kind of laugh at failure or making errors because I failed so many different times that I just kept getting up and moving. And even in the publishing world, you know, I've got friends that will try to write a book and they get turned down and they're done. And I'm like, I never needed 1,000 yeses. I needed one. And I've written 9 books since.
Wow.
I think it coincides with what you focus on, right? Because I will always be thankful for the mentors that I had, and I can name them off as I was going through, who tried to, you know, picked me up. I had a couple of coaches in high school that were fantastic, still talk to this day, my coach in college, and, you know, a few people that took me under their wing when I was a teacher and then as a principal and then within this role too. I actually left my job so I could work with a researcher out of Australia, and he's actually done the largest database of research in the world. And he really has. He's one of the leading researchers in the world. And what was interesting is that I have a blog with Education Week. And when I started working with him, I would take his work and break it down to 1,200 words or less, because that was my way to understand his research. And he loved it because it made it practical for people that they would read it in a way that they hadn't been able to read it before. And he was a mentor for me and really took me under his wing. So to go from where I came from to having this gentleman who was, you know, is still one of the leading researchers in the world, mentorship is really important. So I try to do what I can to make sure that I'm doing that for others around me.
Developing world-class leaders in your community is now easier than ever with LeaderCast. In addition to our flagship May event, becoming a presenting partner allows you to stream multiple events per year, each with an opportunity to earn money. The new LeaderCast lets you invite 1 to 1,000 people with unlimited streaming opportunities. Check out more at LeaderCast.com or the link in our bio. I love this. You know, typically when someone gets a call to adventure, they say no. In every great story. And then a mentor usually comes along and tells them you should say yes. And whoever those two guys were at the gym, once you declined your call to adventure, they told you to go back in there and do it.
I've actually done that. I've been guilty of that a couple of times too. I mean, their names are Tony and Joe. They were retired teachers. They knew my principal.
Yeah.
Principal had been there for 50 years.
Wow.
50. Yeah. And he was like, I think you should go get your master's in administration. I'm like, no way. I'm never going to be a principal. And I told them, and that's exactly what they said to me. And even when my publisher asked me to leave my principalship so I could work with John, who's the researcher, I actually said no, because I had college loans. I had, had a house that I had bought a year and a half earlier. Like, there are seriously things. And then I remember flying away from California just going, that was probably a mistake. Like, I think I don't like living with regrets. And I thought that was probably a mistake, and I'm going to regret not doing that.
In my professional life anyway, I hate regretting the things I didn't do. I'd rather regret something I did do, you know. In life, that's a little different. Like, you can make really bad mistakes by doing dumb things. But in my career, like, I'd rather try something big and kind of fail or learn a lot.
My life would be vastly different. And listen, I was happy being a principal, and my staff was fantastic. They were upset when I left. You know, it's not always great. It's not always glamorous, for sure. But I think those are the moments that when you you just kind of have to dig down deep in and just understand, what am I supposed to do? Because nobody's here to save me, you know? And I find all of those moments to be really good. I often say that I have a learner's mindset, because whether I'm doing leadership coaching, running workshops, you know, I have a webinar show for Education Week that I do, or a podcast, it's always about, I need to ask questions that I want to learn from. I don't want to necessarily ask questions that I already know the answer to.
It's usually people that are successful the way you are walk into a room with a point of view that's just a little bit different than most people have. And so what I'm curious is, when you show up to do one of your workshops or show up to consult at a school district, what do you think is that subtle difference in your point of view compared to maybe the folks that you're going to be helping that day, or maybe other books they might read or whatever? What is it that has helped you carve this space out?
Yeah. So my friend, colleague, Mike Nelson, and I have a book coming out in a couple of months, actually, around this kind of topic, because one of the things that I was finding when I was running workshops is that a lot of people just didn't know why they're in the room. They really had no idea why. And sometimes they were going to be there for, you know, 6 days over 3 months, and I was going to be asking them to collect evidence, and they had no idea why they were there. And that, I think, is a universal issue that a lot of people can identify with, because you go to something, a meeting, and you might think, why am I here? So what I started doing was, because a lot of my work now is long-term work, so it's a hybrid approach.
Okay.
So it might be somewhere 4 or 5 times in person, then remote the other months. But I send a letter out ahead of time. This is, you know, this is my success criteria. This is what we're going to be learning about. Here's something to read before you come. And then when you come, I'm going to be using this online engagement tool, and I'm going to be asking you for your learning needs based on the success criteria. So I do that every single time, whether I'm coaching, whether I'm working with an audience for a workshop, or I'm giving a keynote to 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. And I ask them what their learning needs are, and I always tie that into the content. And one of the things that I also do, which I think is also a universal issue within meetings that people need to learn from, is that I give people time to process information. So I use protocols to make sure that when I'm delivering content, I'm probably delivering content 50% of the time, and the other 50%, I'm giving them time in the moment to actually process the information. And we use the engagement tool to make sure that they're understanding what we're doing, because too often, you know, we talk at people at a meeting, tell them to go on their way, and we expect them to jump into it. And the research behind self-efficacy, the confidence we have in our own actions, shows that people just can't do that.
Yeah.
So giving them time to process, I think, is something that I hear quite often from people. And then even last week, you know, I was delivering a one-day workshop, which is not something I often do, but a lot of people in the room were people I've worked with in the past. And a third of the way through the presentation, Joe, I actually used the online engagement tool, and I had a simple question. Am I meeting your needs right now? Yes, no, not yet. And it's anonymous, so people can blast me away if they wanted to. And out of 140 people, 106 were actually, you know, using the tool. 90 people right away, yes, you're meeting my needs. The other 16 said, not yet. Nobody said no.
Yeah.
And then on the next slide, I just said, tell me how I can meet your needs if I'm not. And many people just put, you're like, this is fantastic, whatever. Other people said, I need more processing time. I'm like, I hear you. I can do that. So what's different is that I feel like maybe when I am running a workshop, or when Mike and I are running a workshop, we are not just concerned about the content that we're focusing on. We're worried about how people come together. We're worried about the environment that we set, because we know a lot of people suffer from anxiety and stress, and they're burned out. So we want to make sure that we're creating an environment that alleviates that, because we also know that stress increases, you know, the fact that there diminishes efficacy. So giving them the opportunity to actually be comfortable and understand we're caring that they're there at the same time we do content is probably one of the things that comes up the most. You really have to make sure you're asking very specific questions for the audience based on what your needs are. I look at it as research when I'm using this. When they're giving me the answers to that question, how is that helping me in the moment? And how is it going to help me look for common themes as I present with other people?
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, most of leadership is done in small groups and individually, like generally, but most leaders also have opportunities where they're leading a lot of people at one time, and whether it's a big team meeting or whatever. And I haven't seen a lot of people, I've seen those tools used before at conferences and things, but it is interesting to think about using that maybe in your daily leadership for if you're going to have an all staff meeting with 100 people or something. Especially if it's truly anonymous, that's what people will worry about at work, right? But I think most CEOs would be afraid to ask, "Am I meeting your needs right now?"
You know, I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to ask that, because I was just reading some research from, I'm a big fan of Adam Grant, and he was talking about the difference between feedback seeking and feedback sharing. And feedback seeking is just, "Hey, Joe, what do you think about my leadership?" And, well, I may sign your paycheck, so you're going to be like, "You're great." Feedback sharing is where I might say things like, "You know, Joe, I got some feedback that I don't give enough processing time during our meetings, and I'm really trying to use protocols to increase the amount of processing time. Do you have any feedback for me on that?" And you're going to be much more likely to actually give me feedback on that specific thing, because you know I'm working on it. You know that I care about it. And for me, when I'm doing a workshop, if people don't like, there are two ways to look at it. They can either not like what I did after we leave and I can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. or they can not like it in the moment and tell me why, and I can start to do something about it.
But so often as public speakers, we try to read the room in some magic way, and a lot of us have good instincts, but we never know for sure. But we can kind of tell when people are zoning out or whatever, right? So we try to make – but this is it's just such a great way to include real-time research, and it's also something – technology-wise, we didn't have, we couldn't do 20 years ago. So it's a great tool. Yeah.
No, and I also think there are simple things. You know, when I was a principal, I would flip my faculty meetings, which meant that we would talk as a staff about what we cared about, say feedback. And I would find an article on feedback and send it out to them a few days before the faculty meeting, just say, hey, read this and bring some evidence of the feedback that you give to kids. And listen, you know, there were times people brought in worksheets with stickers. I didn't care. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I didn't care. It's that I wasn't going to judge them for that. Because why? They thought that was feedback. That's fine. That's my entry point. If that's what you think feedback is, awesome. We can work with that and move on. And I think that's where people miss out sometimes, is they don't take the opportunity to truly get an understanding of people. You know, I was talking about Harvard Business Review. There was a great article recently talking about the three drivers of trust. You know, authenticity. People want to know that they're dealing with the authentic you. Empathy. They want to know that you care about them. And the last one is logic. They want to understand that you really have done a lot of thinking about the direction you're moving. So when you can do these kind of things like flipping stuff and giving them a chance to process it before they come in, you're going to be a whole lot more, you're going to have a deeper conversation, and that's what we want to be able to have.
Well, this has been super fascinating. I'm running out of time. I do want to ask about one more thing that you brought up.
Sure.
The when you said you give information, then you allow time for people.
Oh, processing time and process. Protocols. Yeah.
Is that for you? Is it individual processing or group processing?
Just both.
Okay. Can you just talk about your best practices around that a little bit?
Yeah. So sometimes what we do is we created what's called an interactive notebook. It has reflection points. So I just make it on Google and share it, and they make a copy. But it has different reflection points in there. It has the standards I might be teaching. It might have the academic language, like these are the words, research words I'm going to use, and I want you to know. So individually, and they have some slides in there too. And they can use that for an individual reflection, because reflection from processing individually is actually a metacognitive tool. And metacognition is a really great way to consolidate learning. That's good for anybody. I don't care what sector you're in. The collaborative part is more along the lines of, we might use protocols to give them processing time, but they always have that protocol. Like, we always make sure we have a protocol, because we don't want to just say, take 10 minutes to talk as a group. Now, because we don't know what they're going to talk about.
Yeah.
If you take 15 minutes and use this protocol to outline the conversation you're going to have, those are the ways to be able to do it. So that's what processing time would look like.
Well, Peter, I really enjoyed our time together. You are officially now part of LeaderCast.
Because you talked to me.
So thank you for that.
I hope this was good. I mean,
it was really great. I'm sort of regretting we don't have more time. So I'd love to find ways to get you on our platform more often. And I'm really glad our paths crossed, certainly given me some really practical things to think about, because I think so many of us are in situations where we're leading groups of people. I think the stuff we talked about today is super practical for everyone.
Oh, good. Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
If folks want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
They could just go to www.instructionalleadershipcollective, and they'll be able to go to the website and get in touch with me those ways.
Great. Thanks, Peter. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
In today's ultra-competitive job market, top-tier talent are leaving companies in search of top-tier professional development. Now more than ever, you must invest in your emerging leaders. LeaderCast 365 is a world-class professional development system featuring access to 3 annual LeaderCast events, a post-event journey to activate the inspiration and insights gained from LeaderCast events, plug-and-play lunch and learn programs with group discussion questions, concise video courses to address weaknesses and build upon strengths, and our library of more than 1,200 short-form videos from a slate of industry experts organized into 16 key professional development categories. invest in your all-star employees, and attract new top talent to join them. With LeaderCast 365.